if you're just waking up, nice life you've crafted where you can get up at 9. Pretty cool. I'm envious.
Maybe they're working till late, Jack, to support their wife and 40 children.
I'm envious.
Or their husband and 40 children. Because women work, too.
Okay. The FBI report is out. They've got one.
Actually, women who don't work, work crazy hard in a lot of cases.
Oh, yeah. The idea that my wife doesn't work is pretty funny.
It's hilarious. Yeah.
Just getting texts from her this morning on the home front. Yeah, it's just. How did soap operas ever get off the ground? That's got to be after your kids are old enough and they're all off to school, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, clearly. Yeah.
Because you're not watching soap operas when your kids are at home. That ain't happening.
I did in college. Boy, did I like that.
They're easy to get sucked into. When I was...
We had so much fun doing that. Because, you know, I didn't have a class at noon, so we'd sit there and watch all my children. And then it'd end at, like, you know, 56 after the hour, and we'd sprint to class. This is pre... I mean, we didn't even have VCRs.
We had a similar thing with Star Trek for a while. It was on at, like, 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I had a similar thing Sunday nights at 9. But Sean, you would have enjoyed it. That's all I'm saying.
I got into soap operas briefly when I was a kid. I would get, I got sick, like once every year I'd end up in the hospital for a while, and I'd be in there for a while. I would get into soap operas every single time.
And you were how old?
God, between like 6 and 9 or something like that.
Wow.
I don't remember. I was pretty young though.
Wow.
And, but
she did what?
I'd be in a room with an old woman.
When will Erica find happiness?
Who'd want to watch soap operas? So I'm right. A kid sharing a woman in a room, and then she's watching Days of Our Lives or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And I'd get into it. And then the next thing you know, I'd be back at school, and I'd be coming home and asking my mom, what happened with, you know, Clint and Erica?
That's great. That's hilarious.
But they're, you know, they're designed to suck you in. So you got this Georgetown professor woman. She's in trouble for something she tweeted.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard this one.
President of Georgetown University is denouncing an associate professor's wish through a text line. This is not stand up to Georgetown, blah, 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 blah. You know what these sorts of things are.
Well, this is not our standard.
I'm not even going to read the words. This woman, Christine Fair, tweeted on Saturday about the, well, I'll just read it. The chorus of entitled white men supporting Kavanaugh's nomination despite sexual assaults against him. All of them deserve miserable deaths while feminists gasp. I want to read this correctly because it's so good. Chorus of entitled white men. All of them deserve miserable deaths while feminists laugh as they take their last gasps. She tweeted.
She's teaching children, you say.
She's a college professor. Bonus, we castrate their corpses and feed them to swine.
Oh, there's
yes?
more.
Yeah, there's more. Bonus, we castrate their corpses and feed them to swine. Yes. Her tweet has since been deleted.
Feed them to swine whole, I think. You don't need to.
Man, I think the swine will do the rest of it, yeah.
Be wary of any man with a pig farm.
What do you think of anybody who's a so-called professor at a major university who not only thinks this, but thinks you can tweet it and get away with it?
Is willing to put it in writing publicly.
That person is so far off track.
Right.
They shouldn't be teaching anybody anything.
So consumed with bitterness and anger and bigotry, you know,
and one-sided view of the world that you think you can get away with tweeting that.
Jack, I am willing to wager, but nobody would take the bet. I am willing to wager a significant amount of money that she is a, do you know what she's a professor of? I am willing to wager heavily that she's in the social sciences. Or maybe the long shot, the dark horse is like lit, the humanities.
I'll Google that.
Speaking of which, if you missed the segment, I think it was during the 9 o'clock hour yesterday. This hour anyway, because some people listen at different times. I got to get out of that habit.
Listen to the whole show or none of it. That's my standard.
Wow, the rigorously constructed scientific project to expose the biases and rigid groupthink in the social sciences. Check out yesterday's podcast, the fourth hour. Plus, we're working to get some of the people involved. And they're liberal types, too. They just have realized, wow, this is scary and sick, what's happening in our field. And the to be an outlier, here's what I'm leading up to. You knew there had to be something, right? You lost heart about halfway through, but seriously. To be an outlier on a college campus, you have to be calling for the violent overthrow of the government and the torture of anyone who disagrees this week, right now. That would make you an outlier on a college campus, but it would take that sort of extremism.
She is a political scientist and claims that it was an experiment. However, Georgetown must not be buying it because they condemned her disrespectful discourse.
She claims it was an experiment?
That's what she says. She and Tucker Carlson have been going at it.
What sort of experiment? To see what sort of reaction that drew? I mean, because that's what the scientists I was talking about did. They wrote papers so completely ridiculous to see if they could get them published. And they were. 20 of them, I believe.
An experiment, they insisted. Wrote
20 got seven. Seven of them were actually accepted and peer-reviewed or whatever the process is of getting passed through.
Maybe this was not my most eloquent attempt, she told the Washington Post.
Never contradict me, Sean.
I was helping.
You're not helping.
I will certainly concede I was attempting to make people feel uncomfortable. This idea that I'm somehow calling for actual violence is preposterous. Well, you called for violence in a tweet, you see, and people would take it that way.
Yeah, the old CFV is it's dangerous.
Okay. She claims she set this experiment up for Tucker Carlson, and he proved my experiment. So she thought she would tweet that and Tucker Carlson or he could react to it. Well, I think lots more than Tucker Carlson reacted to it, including
defense.
Including your boss at the university, at Georgetown University.
I'm going to set up an experiment where I threaten to rape my neighbor and see if the local folks react to that. It's a clever ploy. I'm going to call for something so abhorrent that any breathing human would object to it to see if they object to it.
She says it escalated in a way I hadn't anticipated. Yeah, I'd say. Well, again, I get back to your judgment. Even if it was an attempt to get Fox News hosts to react to it, you show a real lack of judgment of how that was right. Going to be received.
Well, and though the political science is often within the College of Humanities, I've lost the bet. I admit
it. The fact that it ended up being an experiment of sorts is interesting. Pretty wacky. Pretty damned wacky.
Should have given your employer a heads up about that.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I know this is probably going to get some blowback, just so you know.
It's a clever experiment to see whether I can provoke people by saying something that will obviously provoke them.
If she had given her employer a heads up, he probably would have said, I'm not sure that's a good idea.
We try not doing that?
How about we don't do that?
My favorite of the fake papers submitted is, of course, Human Reactions to Rape Culture and Queer Performativity in Urban Dog Parks in Portland, Oregon, which the scientists themselves described as our attempt to show that dogs humping each other made some sort of point about human attitudes toward homosexuality, etc. It's a pretty funny read.
So around this time tomorrow, they'll be voting on Kavanaugh, huh? Looking pretty certain that he's going to end up on the court.
Is that the procedural vote, the test vote?
That's the end cloture vote.
Oh.
Then they go to the full, he's on the Supreme Court vote on Saturday.
The end cloture vote, you hold, so you say, who thinks we ought to vote for this guy? And then everybody who likes him says yes, everybody who doesn't like him says no, so you know whether you're going to win the vote or not. So that's why they do that. That's one of the reasons.
Gotcha. You're listening to the Armstrong and Getty Show.
Armstrong and Getty.
The conscience of the nation.
The Armstrong and Getty Show.
The carrot or stick approach with Brandon the breaking news donkey. We need some brang. We alternate between the carrot and stick approach.
Breaking news! Breaking news!
Sometimes we just hit him with the carrot.
Sometimes we hit him with a carrot.
putting aside the animal abuse element to that joke, that's very funny. GOP swing votes Senators Flake and Susan Collins of Maine have said that they, what is the specific wording, express satisfaction with the FBI report.
Okay, I got two theories.
Just two?
Neither one of them are very charitable to a lot of people. I think several of these politicians, ours, were always going to vote for him, but they had to really act like they went through this difficult situation, really agonized over it to make sure, you know, they got their credibility for either their own constituents or in Flake's case running for president or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
There's that.
Which is phony and despicable, and it's the business they're in.
That is the business they're in. Also, as I put out earlier, and this is an incredibly unfair thing to say, and I'm not really comfortable saying it since, you know, they're actually in our listening audience, and these are real people. I think there's a decent chance that the FBI report, you know, as they talk to more people and nailed down the facts, makes Mrs. Ford seem a little wacky. It doesn't mean that something bad didn't happen to her, but her story of it being Kavanaugh doesn't hold up. There's just a bunch of things that just don't match up, and she's got some problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Which wouldn't surprise me with that whole needing an extra door, can't fly, can fly.
Right. That may well be true.
Doesn't make her a bad person.
No, I'm where I've always been. It's unknown and unknowable what happened to her and who did it and the rest of it. Let's see. Susan Collins, one of three, said Thursday that it appears to be a very thorough investigation, but I'm going back later to personally read the interviews.
Did you say it's 700 pages? Did you make that up?
I made that up.
Okay.
I was thinking it could be very, very long. I mean, depending on the number of people they interviewed and how long the transcripts are. Mm. Let's see. There's nothing in it we didn't know already, said Chuck Grassley.
And these reports are essentially just, these are the things that they told us.
And then he told his grandchildren a very long story about steamboats. Sorry, Sean. I knew there was a punchline in there somewhere. And it took me a minute to get there. You were saying?
So these reports that are in there, they're essentially, these are the verbatim testimonies that they gave us under oath. They don't put any sort of, and he seemed to look around a lot and was a little shifty in this, so we don't.
Right, which I think is interesting, but yeah, apparently they don't do that.
Michael, if I might play a bit of audio, I don't know what you're staring at there on your screen. I'm guessing it's porn.
Wow.
But I would like to bring
a
guess.
That's just gross.
If I might.
And the last thing I'll point out, the next person that refers to an FBI report as being worth anything obviously doesn't understand anything. FBI explicitly does not, in this or any other case, reach a conclusion. Period. Period. So, Judge, there's no reason why you should know this. The reason why we cannot rely on the FBI report, you wouldn't like it if we did. Because it is inconclusive. They say he said, she said, and they said. Period. So when people wave an FBI report before you, understand, they do not reach conclusions.
I would vote for that man if it were 1996.
So, as Joe Biden said there, so the FBI report has got name, new Judge Kavanaugh in 1982, and then the quote for them.
Right. They might have something like, and if there are FBI agents listening, and I know there are, actually, I also think they might say, we were unable to corroborate this statement, or the subject said that Joe Jones was also there. We contacted Mr. Jones, and he was unable to corroborate that or said he had no memory of being there. It will probably have that sort of information.
And so is why these things kind of carry so much weight, since they don't come to conclusions, is it because there is such a bigger penalty to lying to a FBI agent as opposed to these sworn testimonies?
That was the argument the Democrats were making last week. Was when the hearings were going on, and whenever they were in front of a microphone, they were saying that.
So if they lied in the sworn testimonies that they supplied to the senators, that's a pretty equivalent to the same penalties as lying to an FBI agent.
You can be prosecuted for it.
Okay.
I mean, I would have to look at the statute. I assume it's a similar punishment. But, what was I going to say? And they don't actually carry that much weight, Sean, the reports themselves, just because they, if I were nuts and said, you know, Sean Thomas, he does a lot of dogfighting. I mean, he's run a dogfighting ring for 15 years. Number of dogs he's killed. And then they go to you and you say, what the hell are you talking about? I love dogs. I would never be engaged in dogfighting. And they talked to everybody you've ever known. And everybody you've ever known said, there's no freaking way he would do that. My words would still be in the FBI report. Quote, Sean ran a dogfighting ring. He killed so many dogs. And anybody could publish that because if it's leaked. Because it's in the report. So that's an incredibly dangerous thing.
So they make you read it and then determine, well, we got 40 other people who say they've got nothing on it.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So my determination is he doesn't run dogfighting rings.
Correct.
It's so up to each individual ancient senator.
So right. Once again, we're requiring on the reading comprehension of sometimes octogenarians.
I'd like to know how many of them actually read it. That'd be an interesting one. They won't tell us that, but...
Let me tell you about the births on the Lusitania. They're more comfortable than you might imagine.
It's ageism. That's what that is.
Of the worst sort. Oh, hey, this is good news. I think it's good news. Yeah, it's good news. I've decided it's good news. generally speaking, I don't have a great deal of interest in when great books are made into movies. There are clearly exceptions.
I sure don't.
There are absolutely exceptions to that, you know, general thought. But Hillbilly Elegy, the absolutely brilliant book by J.D. Vance about his people, poor white Appalachian types.
Both so poor, so white.
So whether still in Appalachia or having migrated to, in his case, Ohio, absolutely brilliant book. Just read it. Just read it. I could describe it to you at greater length, but it's one of the great books ever written about the way people really are. It's being made, the rumor, the rather well-substantiated rumor is it's being made into a movie with Ron Howard at the helm.
That's a good sign.
As he was just spotted in Middletown, Ohio.
That's a good sign.
Opie himself was there ooching around.
I hope they stick to the book and it's not like based on Hillbilly Elegy and it's kind of similar, but there's a little extra love story in there or a hero that wasn't there in the book or something.
Yeah. Interestingly, J.D. Vance, who's one of my favorite people, and we're trying to track him down for the podcast, right? Yeah, he told the news he was approached as far back as 6 months ago by several directors looking to make Hillbilly Elegy into a movie. I'm a pretty private person, felt uncomfortable about it, he said. It was hard enough for me to write the book, but a movie is a much bigger stage. It's a much larger invasion of privacy.
I could see that.
He also had issues over relinquishing control over what was a very personal story. You write a book, you have complete control over it, over what goes into it, how you present your family, and then a movie is really someone else's project. You're sort of necessarily trusting a complete stranger to tell a story you think needs to be told. After denying a few relatively famous filmmakers, Vance said he shifted gears and agreed to talk to two of them. That included Ron Howard. Ron was just this incredibly kind and thoughtful guy.
Yeah, I would take Ron. I'd put it in Ron's hands more than practically anybody.
There's more to that quote. We'll get to it in a few minutes.
Movie tradesman.
That's right, Clint.
What's coming up in your
news? How's that empty chair bit of yours coming along?
What's coming up, Marshall?
Got an update on the undecided in the Kavanaugh vote. National Security Advisor John Bolton blasting Iran. And more workers are ghosting their jobs.
Yeah, there's some nuttiness going on with Iran, man. We gotta be honest.
And the job thing. We just heard a story, I think, that fits in yesterday.
Okay. All on the way on the Armstrong and Getty Show.
So just to finish up the thought about J.D. Vance and Hillbilly Elegy and it becoming a movie with Ron Howard. Vance said he talked to a few directors, and Ron was just this incredibly kind and thoughtful guy. But he was also doing something that I was trying to do with the book, which was to tell a story about a group of people who don't get stories told about them very often. And he seemed very interested in approaching the project carefully and thoughtfully and compassionately and really just revealing what he thinks is an important story. And obviously, I think is an important story, too. Asked if he had the inevitable question. Any actors in mind to play him in the movie? Vance laughed. Oh. No, no. Same answer all of us would give. Chris Hemsworth. You know?
Mr. Clean, in my case.
I want a big, strapping, 2% body fat, muscular blonde Joe Getty on the screen. Please.
So, Sean, as you know, has literally hundreds of dollars invested in the market. He's really gotten into the whole thing, and every day he gives us a one-word market review.
Is it hundreds or hundred of dollars?
No, literal hundreds of dollars.
Wow.
Multiple hundreds.
Wow. Woo, so I'll back the F up.
What's your one-word market review for this morning?
Markets are unhappy.
Oh, sell! Sell!
Okay. So, invest accordingly. Here's your news with Marcia Phillips.
Well, support for Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh appears to be growing among the undecided Senate Republicans.
If they were ever undecided.
Arizona's Jeff Flake and Maine's Susan Collins said the follow-up FBI investigation appears to have been very thorough. Flake saying there's no additional corroboration of sexual assault allegations in that FBI report.
Flake went on to not say that he'd done some quick polling in New Hampshire and Iowa, and found out he would not get a single Republican vote if he voted against Kavanaugh for his run in 2020.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, meanwhile, says, okay, it's time now for a vote. The FBI investigation uncovered nothing of substance. McConnell calling some of the allegations patently ridiculous.
How did we get from a chorus of expert praise and professional respect to wild tales of violent gangs, sexual assault rings, fistfights on boats in Rhode Island harbors, and the possibility, get this, of an argument in a college bar?
Senate Democrats.
It's a good question. As a columnist in the New York Times points out, that whole ice chucking thing was, man, that's something to put on the front page with big letters as a headline.
Wow. 30-year-old ice chucking allegations. More than that. 33 or 4?
Yeah. Senate Democrats, though, not happy about the FBI report. California Democrat Dianne Feinstein telling reporters the investigation didn't go far enough.
It looks to be a product of an incomplete investigation that was limited, perhaps by the White House. I don't know.
Well, we got a vote to end Senate debate on the nomination set for tomorrow. Full Senate vote on the nomination Saturday.
So, I was reminded of...
And then he'll be on the bench next week, and he can start taking away women's reproductive rights as early as Tuesday, I think.
That's right. Forced impregnations, just like in that hit TV show.
Shotgun and beers right on the bench.
Exactly.
Exactly. Throwing his empties at the opposing counsel.
Slipping things into Sotomayor's tea.
Oh, my.
Crushing the empty cans with his gavel.
I was reminded, yes. And I'm scrolling because I can't remember the name. Who was the guy who did not get confirmed to the Supreme Court because he smoked a little pot? Yeah, Douglas Ginsburg, that's right. Yeah, Reagan nominated him, but he admitted that he'd smoked a little weed in his youth, so they got rid of him.
This was in the 60s?
80s. Reagan?
No, I was just making 80s. A joke about how long ago that seems.
1987.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. He had smoked marijuana with his students while he was a Harvard law professor.
Yeah,
sounds like a great teacher.
I see your point. It sounds like something that came out of many, many, many decades ago.
Yeah. No.
Not during my life. Like, the fact that happened during my lifetime seems insane.
One person said, you just can't have a law professor smoking marijuana who expects to be on the Supreme Court. Yeah. You know, he was breaking
Times
the
change.
Law.
Yeah, yeah.
He was flouting the law, Jack. Federal law.
How dare you?
Right.
On another front, National Security Advisor John Bolton says Iran is not dismantling its nuclear program. He was talking with reporters at the White House. Bolton saying Iran continues to threaten international peace and security.
Iran is a rogue regime. It has been a threat throughout the Middle East, not only for its nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs, but it's acted for decades as the central banker of international terrorism.
As an example of the Iranian threat, Bolton was praising the French, who accused Iran's intelligence ministry of being behind a foiled plot to bomb an exiled opposition group near the French capital.
Wow.
They made a move that risks starting already complicated ties between Paris and Tehran, straining them, rather, and furthering the deterioration of those relations. Bolton saying,
they arrested, and other European governments arrested, accredited Iranian diplomats. Accredited Iranian diplomats. For conspiracy to conduct this attempted assault on the rally in Paris.
Wow, and
I'm not familiar with the vernet. So that means the people who are supposed to and allowed to be there with diplomatic access to various
things. And immunity. Yeah.
Right.
France taking the lead and yelling at the U.S. to get back into the Iran nuclear deal too.
Yep.
And doing a lot of trade with Iran and stuff like that. And now they're getting a thumb in the eye for their efforts. That's got to piss them off. Two quick thoughts that I want to get in. Number one, talking about smoking pot, it's against the law, etc. We talked to Mike Rogers in our long-form podcast about a lot of different things. He was the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee for a long time, an FBI guy. And he said some really, really interesting things about the legalization of marijuana and the way Mexico is reacting to that.
Right.
Really thought-provoking. Oh. You know, maybe we'll play that clip in a couple of minutes for you. Second thought, I'm looking through the history of Supreme Court nominees who were rejected.
All right.
And there have been quite a few, some for ethical lapses, some that appeared to be racists. Herbert Hoover's nomination of John J. Parker was rejected because the American Labor Union opposed him because he favored yellow dog contracts. Hmm. I assume that means like a yellow lab in every workplace, or I don't. Does anybody know what a yellow dog contract is? No.
A contract between a worker and an employer in which the worker agrees not to remain in or join a union.
Right, it's a union busted.
Oh,
gotcha.
Oh, you can't have a yellow dog contract. That guy's kind of mundane. He was a Nixon nominee. Here's one guy they just decided was too inexperienced. You don't know what you're talking about. Get. Then you got the pot smoking Ginsburg. Bork, who was borked, right. Which was a crazy coincidence.
Because of his beard, he wasn't allowed on.
Yeah.
That was a terrible beard.
Yeah.
Hasn't been a coincidence like that since the whole Lou Gehrig disease.
Exactly. No, that's kind of a quick summary why he was rejected, but it was mostly the beard.
One final note, ending a relationship by disappearing without a word, as you know, is ghosting, and now more and more people are doing the same thing with their jobs. Instead of giving 2 weeks notice or any notice at all, they are just stopped showing up for work without a text, an email, or a call, and they don't respond when their employers try to reach them.
I did that once, and it was great.
I
loved it.
I did it once, and it haunts me to this day.
Really?
It was a very low moment in my integrity of my life.
Let's have you two go at it, then.
Yeah, I'm not proud of it at all.
So, why do you say it was great, Sean? Stand up for your advocacy for what is clearly a sin.
Let me just interject here before he answers. If it were somebody that I hated and had done me wrong, I would do it without any conscience whatsoever.
Sounds really satisfying to me.
Yeah. A new manager came in. I was anti pretty much everything he did since he was there. And then one day during a lunch break, I said, you know what? I'm done. And I just walked out. I didn't finish my shift. About like 2 weeks later, I got a letter from them and say, hey, you haven't been showing up for your shifts. We're taking that as a sign that you quit. Here's your last check. I was like, oh, look at that. They figured it out. And I was
and
on with my life.
Fade to credits.
Yeah.
So we were talking to a gent yesterday who was talking about, and I'd heard this before, the incredible shortage of truck drivers right now because the unemployment rate is so low. And trucking is still an incredibly important part of our economy.
Right.
And guys are literally getting to a drop-off point, seeing that there's a long line, and saying, F it, leaving the load by the roadside and going away. And he's talking about guys getting poached for 20, 30, 40% more money all the time. It's like a bidding war. Now, if you're
a trucker, killing me because it's been a dream of my life to be a truck driver, and it's the golden age of being a truck driver.
Right.
And here I am saddled with this damn job.
Wow.
Different time in my life, though. I would have jumped all over that.
Yeah.
Got out on the open road, listening to music, talking on the CB, wearing a vest.
What would your CB nickname have been?
Mr. Clean.
Leather vest?
Yeah, leather vest.
Yeah, that's a good look.
Got a chaw?
Plaid shirt.
Get that one arm way tanner than the other.
Yes. Right.
Always on the windowsill. Right.
What sort of cap do you suppose you'd wear? Trucker's cap.
I think I'd go...
You're wearing a trucker's cap now.
Yes, I'm wearing a trucker's cap now, but I think I'd go full on not trucker's cap as a trucker.
Oh, ironic. Yeah. Beret?
I got
a jaunty beret.
I got to tell you, back in the day, outside of Fontana where I grew up, there were some truck stops that were rocking on the weekend.
Oh, oh, I just don't doubt it.
The lifestyle suits me so well. Oh, just on the road by yourself, eating alone in a truck stop sounds great to me.
Nothing sexier than a truck stop.
Oh, yeah. You meet some nice gals there, Michael.
Yes, sleeping in my truck.
And they got the showers right there.
I would love that.
When Jack and I were first putting the show together many, many years ago, we would meet at this truck stop in Salina, Kansas, and eat pie.
Oh, yes.
While we talked about the show.
Pie, drinking coffee all day. I'm built for being a truck driver.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you'd slide right into it.
Yes.
There you go. That's a wrap. That's your news. I'm Marshall Phillips, the Armstrong and Getty Show, the conscience of the nation.
Boy, is there any job that'd be like that for me? I mean, I'd like to produce music, but that's fancy. I don't know. I'd be a pretty good waiter, I think. A little surly. You know, it'd have to be a roadhouse type situation.
Be a lot of get it yourself.
Really? We all want more water. Yeah. Just keep walking.
I'd like some more water. That's interesting.
Really?
So do I.
I say that to my kids, my youngest especially. He'll be sitting on the couch and yell, "I'm hungry!" That's interesting. It's really interesting that you're hungry. Until he finally catches on. So you wanted some Mike Rogers here.
Yeah, I think it's worth playing. Yeah, it's listening back, I've enjoyed the heck out of it. You ought to check out the podcast, armstrongandgetty.com.
Okay, specifically on...
Or wherever podcasts are distributed for free, because we're stupid.
On what legalizing marijuana did for Mexico and their drug trade.
Yep.
Pretty interesting, coming up on the Armstrong and Getty Show.
Armstrong and Getty.
The conscience of the nation. Of the nation.
Yo. Oh, man. We're jammed. A couple of quick things. Number one, breaking news. Christine Blasey Ford's activist attorney has released a list of 8 witnesses they demand the FBI talk to.
Okay. That's a good move.
To prolong it and make it look as though the FBI was negligent.
Or if you think you were wrong to... You didn't talk to him. Why did you talk to him?
It's 2 rough descriptions of people. People who before wouldn't talk to the committee, now say they will. Including the polygrapher, and also a handful of people that Christine Blasey Ford said she was sexually assaulted by a guy who's now a federal judge, too, in recent years.
Okay.
I'm not sure that, you know, would convince anybody of anything. Also, we want to get to this, talking about pot being legal, et cetera. We talked to Mike Rogers, former chairman of the House Committee on Intelligence. We don't have time, Michael? When do we usually... 30 seconds.
But it'll be so good tomorrow, you see, is the thing.
No. I'm unhappy. Who will make me happy?
How long will you remain unhappy after the show? Till you get to your car?
At least 45 minutes. I'm angry.
Oh, boy. He holds on to things.
Yeah. I like to milk them. I like to stew on them. Go to wherever podcasts are distributed for free because we're stupid and listen to the Mike Rogers podcast, which has been posted. It's really good.
Don't know why the intelligence shot at us for your podcast promotions.
With the self-flagellation, with the beating us up, beating yourself up.
Motivates me.
Mm. Does it?
Stupid. What's the matter with you?
Final Thoughts with Armstrong and Getty. Here's your host for Final Thoughts,
it's
Joe Getty.
It's just so silly. Let's get a final thought from everybody. Michelangelo, what's your final thought for us?
I'm off to the dentist where I do my usual trick. I put false teeth in and I open my mouth and they all fall out the moment the hygienist goes to clean my teeth.
That's a good one.
Yeah. That is a good one, Michael. Hilarious. Positive Sean, final thought?
As my financial education continues, the gains happen slowly. The losses can happen quickly. I'm going to go be donating some plasma later.
Yeah.
Marshall Phillips, what is your final thought for the folks?
I got to tell you, this afternoon I'm going to take another dip in the love pool. That's all I'll say for now.
Oh, can't wait to hear about that. A dip in the love pool.
Is that a really gross euphemism, or are you just going to... Well,
hopefully there's chlorine in there.
Jack, yeah, a lot of it. Jack, do you have a final thought for us?
Another blow to my ego, having... ego, not my eagle. Another blow to my ego. having not received a single Nobel Prize this week.
Oh, so sorry.
They've just released the MacArthur Genius Grants for the year. 25 geniuses.
Yes.
Have each been awarded $625,000.
Darn, we got it. We have the list.
And I did not get one. There's a chemist, there's a painter, there's a violinist, there's a human rights lawyer, there's a preacher, there's a community organizer from San Jose.
Boo!
Well, once again, I failed.
I like a disorganized community. My final thought is, it's funny. Where I live, it doesn't rain for a long time. Then it rained to beat hell yesterday afternoon. I was caught out in the middle of it. During the rainy times, we long for sunshine. During the sunny times, we long for a hoodie and maybe a rainy night. And it's just the way human beings are made.
We're never happy? Is that what you're saying?
No, we need cycles. We need variety. We need the seasons. That's why I think cities that always have roughly the same climate are going against God. Yes, San Diego, I'm looking at you.
That's a real blow to my ego. Armstrong and Getty wrapping up another grueling four-hour workday.
So many people to thank. So little time. Go to armstrongandgetty.com to grab the Mike Rogers podcast. We also have Clicks articles. Oh, that great fake science stuff we talked about yesterday. Even if you didn't hear it, just go to the website and check it out.
Those people should get a genius grant.
Yes.
See you tomorrow. God bless America.
This is a historic act of devastating incompetence.
I will not sugarcoat this. This is a disappointing day for us.
Big mistake, but not too bad.
The fun level in this room is at an 11 right now, and that brought it down.
The ride is over!
The time for the clowns and the acrobats and the dancing bears has passed.
Get away from here. Get!
Yeah, we apologize for our stupidity. And we really hope you forgive us for what we've done.
Thank you, and good night.
But the show's over.
What? Bye-bye.
All rise. Here comes the judge.
Armstrong and Getty, the voice of the West.